You're just in time for the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, the radio outreach of the Christian Research Institute. Our purpose here at CRI is to equip Christians to pursue sound doctrine, to discern truth and error, and to become faithful disciples of Christ, because life and truth matter. For more information, to order resources or donate, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. The following program was pre-recorded. Now, here's the president of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. A lot of you hanging on. We'll go right to the phone calls. First up is Markel in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi.
Hey, Hank. Thanks for taking my call. What I want to do is I want to ask you this question, but I've been having a discussion with a friend about gay marriage. But instead of being like, here's what he said, I'm just going to talk to you as though I'm him.
Oh, so I'm
going to play the devil's advocate in this conversation. Okay, here we go. Hey, it seems like you Christians only don't like gay marriage only because of your religion. If your religion didn't say anything about gay marriage, you guys have no reason to legally, in America, legally say that it shouldn't happen. So your religion is the only reason that you guys don't want it to happen.
Well, you know, there's a more basic issue here, and that is the issue of rights. Rights come from our nature. Our nature comes from God. In an age of scientific enlightenment, you cannot deny that there's an uncaused first cause. Because to deny that is to suppose that nothing creates everything, that life comes from non-life, and that the life that comes from non-life produces morals. And I think that there's a fundamental issue that ought to be discussed in this vein as well, and that is legislation in general. Legislation is significant because legislation determines what is going to happen in a civil society. So it's not a matter of whether you can legislate a particular position, but which particular position is going to be legislated. And so as Christians, yes, we want to be involved in every aspect of society and do all that is permissible so that the foundation and the building blocks that rest upon that foundation, or I might say the pillars that rest upon that foundation, are stable rather than shattered. So we're doing this because it matters. Truth matters. Ideas have consequences. It's a matter of sustaining a civil society, because if you do not, it makes all the difference in the world. I mean, you look at the issue from the standpoint of civil realities, enshrining a false definition of marriage in our laws is like flooding the economy with counterfeit money. Not only that, but if you look at a redefinition of marriage and what it does to children, we ought to care. Children need a father and a mother. In fact, before the political correctness overwhelmed Barack Obama, he said the very same thing that I'm saying right now. He said, we know the statistics. In other words, he was pointing to metrics. He was pointing to real numbers. He was pointing to sociology. And what does the sociology say? Barack Obama says, children who grow up without a father are 5 times more likely to live in poverty and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of schools, and 20 times more likely to end up in prison. I'm quoting him. That's all. He goes on to say, they're more likely to have behavioral problems or run away from home or become teenage parents themselves. And the foundations, which is the very thing that I've been talking about, the foundations of our community are weaker because of it. So he's talking about the very thing that, again, we're talking about. The foundations of civil societies are weakened, and that impacts people and even the most vulnerable of people in a dramatic fashion. And that's why we should care. That's why we should be involved in the process.
So two follow-up questions. Number one, why should any law be based on any religion, number one? And number two, marriage is just about, you know, about taxes, about people getting a tax break. Marriage has nothing to do with kids or starting a family. People don't necessarily get married to start a family. People get married to make sure that the person that they love can be taken care of. So so that's what marriage is about, and why should anybody, one religion, with many ways that people view religion, in America, why should one person's religion be a law for everybody else?
Well, I don't think this is a person's specific religion. This is about natural law to begin with. And as I've talked about before, there are not only civil realities involved, there are biological realities involved, as well as anthropological realities involved. So this is not a specific sectarian religion that's at issue. These are basic building blocks of civil societies at issue. And certainly from our perspective, we say, yes, if there is a God, and all the evidence in an age of scientific enlightenment says there has to be a God. If there is a God, then we should set our sights not by shooting stars, but rather by the North Star provided by that God. If God created us, if he knit us together in our mother's womb, and I think that you could make a very compelling case for that. If that, in fact, is true, then he also knows what is best for us, not only individually, but collectively as a society. And thus, to denigrate his definition of law is to simply wreak havoc on ourselves and civil societies around us. So the basic argument goes from, first of all, we can demonstrate that there is a God. To think otherwise is simply to be an obscurantist in an age of scientific enlightenment. Secondly, you can demonstrate that the Bible is divine as opposed to merely human in origin, and therefore becomes a legitimate set of principles by which we can live our lives in such a way that things are useful rather than useless. And thirdly, you can demonstrate beyond the peradventure of a doubt that the God who created the universe, the God who gave us the North Star in his word, is also the God who resurrects people from the dead. And this is the most foundational of all points. If you genuinely love someone else, recognize that Jesus, who spoke and the universe leapt into existence, says, "Do not be amazed at this. A time is coming when all who are in their graves will come out. Some will rise to live, and some will rise to be eternally condemned." So we can take this situation from the simple shortness of life to the simple reality that life never ends. So we can take it from our mortal existence and transpose it into an immortal imperative. And thus, if we do not speak out, it has consequences in this life and in the life to come. And again, this is not simply ill-founded logic, but it is logic that is irrepressible. You can't deny that there is a God. The heavens declare the glory of God. When you see a universe that has 100 billion galaxies, each with 100 billion or more stars, you can't say that just happened. Nothing produced all of that. That is simply, as I said, to resign yourself to the status of being an obscurantist.
I see. And can you touch on the fact that marriage is not about anything but taxes? It's not about kids. It's not about raising kids. It's not about love. And the government shouldn't discriminate about who it provides taxes for. That's just like the Jim Crow South.
Well, no, I don't think it is like the Jim Crow South, and I did address that. I mean, it's not at all about identity. It has to do with behaviors, and I think that we're transposing those two concepts. I do think it is wrong to discriminate. I do think it is unfair to treat people in a way that is untoward. We should never do that. And I've said many times on the air, though we have to recognize that God has spoken, we also have to have an attitude adjustment, because many people within the Christian community, at least some within the Christian community, I don't want to overstate it, are using a we, they, siege mentality against the world. And that's not what it's all about. It's about reaching rather than repelling. But given all of that, we must not yield, because we're talking about natural law. We're not talking about discrimination. We're talking about natural law. And the minute you deny that, you deny your other rights. You don't want to do that for yourself or anybody else.
Well, thanks, Hank. Thanks for indulging me as I took the devil's advocate position. And hopefully my friend will we'll see what happens.
Well, you can't change anybody's heart, but you can be right. Well-equipped.
Amen. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call. I'll be back in just a few moments.
If you're not horrified, you should be, because the relentless assaults on sanity have now reached a fevered pitch. In fact, you know nothing less than civilization is at stake when ideology trumps reality, or when psychology trumps biology. That's wokeism in a nutshell. The threat is not only critical, it's urgent, which is why Christians need to wake up, and wake up fast. You won't want to miss the upcoming special issue of the Christian Research Journal that contains everything you need to know about the cult of wokeism and its impact on Western civilization. You'll read sobering articles with penetrating analysis of the social and mental disease that is reaching a flashpoint. To receive your copy of the special woke edition of the Christian Research Journal, visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.
If you thought the pandemic was scary, it may actually pale in comparison to today's pandementia. We're talking about wokeism and its growing legions of followers who have defiantly and dangerously declared their independence from reality. That's right. For those infected by the woke virus, anytime their ideology encounters reality, ideology wins. To help halt the advance of this deadly social and mental disease, you'll want a copy of the upcoming special edition of the Christian Research Journal. In it, you'll feast on penetrating analyses and criticisms of one of the most dangerous ideologies in modern history, all written to help you grasp just how deranged this tyrannical movement actually is. To receive your copy, visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI.
With over 500,000 copies in print, Hank Hanegraaff's Bible Answer books were born out of his many years of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. He's taken his on-air answers to questions and chiseled them until only the gems emerge. Questions involving biblical interpretation, cults, science, ethics, apparent contradictions, and much more. This remarkable collection of concise answers is now even better. My goal, says Hank, is to take the complex and make it simple and memorable. Receive your copy of the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI.
or visit equip.org. That's equip.org.
Now back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Bobby next in Brick, New Jersey. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Hank. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, first of all, thank you for taking my call. And my question, I was tuning in and I heard you speak on marriage. And my question to you, Hank, is since marriage was created by God, we know it's you know, a man and a woman, and it's become a political type of an issue. My question to you, Hank, is what can we do as the church to turn that tide? Because what's happened is, you know, it's usually a religious institution that, you know, marries, you know, a man and a woman. Anyway, I mean, I know that now it's a tax thing and this and that as well, but ultimately, you know, the ceremony and all that usually is done in a church, you know, and we know there's some apostate churches out there, but my question to you directly, Hank, is what strategies do you suggest as a man of God that we as Christians out in the world can do to turn that tide and make a difference as salt and light?
Yeah, think about Martin Luther. He nailed 95 theses to the castle door in Wittenberg, and he ignited a mighty Reformation. And I think we should look at the power of one, and we should do what we do for the audience of one, for God alone, and leave the results up to Him. So what are we called to do? We're called to be salt and light. Jesus made clear that when the salt loses its saltiness, it is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. So we can look at society and say the problem is pagans, when in reality, according to Jesus, the problem is the salt has lost its saltiness. Pagans are going to do what pagans do. What transforms a civil society is Christians being salt and light. That's what transformed the Roman Empire, and that's what can be transformational today. But it's only if Christians will abdicate political correctness and stand for life and truth. And I should note that there are inherent hazards in marriage redefinition, that it's not too much to say that marriage redefinition opens Pandora's box and then spells a death knell to civil societies. Fairly applied, you take the logic that is being espoused today, the narrative that is being communicated. That narrative, if you strip it down, simply erodes the rational basis for rejecting aberrations that range from polygamy to incest. And you can well imagine the social impact on women and children. It's singularly draconian. So this is no trifling matter. And this is why we're telling people all the time that discernment skills are needed, that we need to learn how to think Christianly, because if we do, we can be salt and light, but if we do not, then all we are is a microcosm of the culture. Now, again, can the landslide be turned around? We don't know that. But we are not called to change anything. We are called to be faithful. We're not even called to win. You look at the Apostle Paul, did he win? Well, in a short temporary sense, no, he didn't. He died. But his writings are still impacting people today. So what we have to do is be faithful and fruitful and leave whatever happens to God.
All right. Well, thank you, Hank.
You got it. I was thinking about Oxford scholar Os Guinness. He was right to wonder whether the stones of the Washington Monument can escape the fate of the Parthenon, the pyramids, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. And I think ultimately the answer to that question will be found in whether Christians are willing to stand shoulder to shoulder for life and truth, or whether they're going to be swept away by the sentiments that are now politically correct in our culture. Back to the phone lines, we'll talk to Jose in El Paso, Texas next. Hi, Jose.
Good afternoon, Hank. Thank you for taking my call. My question is the difference between the only begotten and the firstborn Son of God. I always thought it was the same thing, but I'm beginning to realize there is a distinction between them. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Simply put, to say that Jesus is the only begotten is to say that he is the unique Son of God. We're all sons of God, but he is the unique Son of God. He is Theanthropus, the God-man. He is God in human flesh. He's one person with two natures, 100% human and 100% divine. So we are not the begotten of God in the unique sense that Jesus Christ is. To say firstborn is a different idea. To say firstborn has to do with preeminence or prime position. So we can say of Jesus Christ that he's not only begotten, but he's firstborn in the sense that he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn, not in creation, but over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things. So again, he is the one who has preeminence. It's very interesting when you look at firstborn from a contextual standpoint in Scripture, you see that David is called firstborn. Though he was the last born of Jesse's sons, he is firstborn because he has the prime position. And that's the idea that Colossians is communicating with respect to Jesus Christ. He is preeminent.
Okay, let's see if I get it straight. So when you mentioned that all things were created by him and through him and for him, is that him as the firstborn?
Yes, that's precisely what Colossians 1 says, yes.
Firstborn, and then the only begotten would be when he became flesh and dwelt among us.
Well, it means that he is the unique. I think the operative word would be unique, that he is the unique Son of God. So we can be called sons of God in one sense, but not in the sense that Jesus is the only begotten of the Father. Because as Jesus is the only begotten of the Father, we're talking about him in the sense of being the unique Son of God.
Okay, well, that sheds a lot of light. Thank you, Hank. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call. Back to the phone lines. We will talk to Sherry. She's listening in North Carolina, Gastonia. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
How do we hear from the Lord today?
The principal way in which you hear from the Lord is through his word. God speaks to us through the majesty of his word, but it's not the only way. My wife was telling me last night, we were having dinner together, and we were talking about a book that we're both really excited about, and she says she opens that book and reads the prayers of that book, and when she does, she hears the voice of God. So now God is speaking to her through human agencies, something someone else wrote. So God can speak to us in various ways. He can speak to us through that still, small voice within. He can speak to us through the majesty of his word, which is the principal way in which he speaks to us, and the way by which we test all other things, even those things that are written by other people, which God can use to speak to us, but yet must be tested in light of the final court of arbitration, which is the Bible. And I think one of the ways in which we can hear the voice of God is to memorize the word of God. Because when we do, so often God will bring by his Spirit back to our remembrance those things that we've hidden in our heart. And in that way, he speaks directly to us in comfort, in instruction. So we learn how to follow him through what he has given us as the template in his word.
Okay. What is this still small voice within? I mean, it's like asking him a question and just waiting, or?
Well, you know, my sheep hear my voice. So there's a sense in which you recognize that Jesus Christ lives within. That means that you have come into a unique relationship with him. So he can speak to you in the stillness, the quietness of a sanctuary, whether it's a car or whether it's a bathroom or whether it's a bedroom. He can speak to us and we can identify his voice. The reason we can identify his voice is we've come to know him through the majesty of his word. So the more you know the word, the more you can identify God speaking spirit to spirit, which is something that is hard to identify. I mean, we cannot even identify in an age of scientific enlightenment how the mind can cause the physical synapses of the brain to fire. Much less can we fully comprehend mind-to-mind communication, but yet that is precisely what happens when we interact with the very one who has come to live within us, which is a way of saying have a unique and permanent relationship with those who are his children. Unfortunately, we are out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Whatever you can do to stand with us prayerfully and financially will be deeply appreciated. Thanks for tuning in.
We appreciate you tuning in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Before we sign off today, here's our contact information. By phone, dial 888-7000-CRI, which translates to 888-7000-274. On the internet, go to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina. The zip code is 28271. Our prayer is that today's broadcast has equipped you to better defend your faith and encouraged you to pursue sound doctrine and godly living. Thank you for listening. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org.